Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. This week we are looking into the skyrocketing prices of all of our gadgets, from smartphones to games consoles. Is it really AI driving those rising prices, and is there any sign that they're going to come back down again?
Plus, we're joined by psychologist and psychotherapist Dr. Charlotte Armitage for a fascinating conversation about the future of technology and its impact on all of us.
It will be a really thought-provoking discussion, I think. But before we get into it, a quick word from our friends at CEX.
Yes, with all this talk about gadgets getting more expensive, it can feel like upgrading your tech is becoming harder and harder to justify.
Ah, but there is another way.
That's the CEX way. Whether you're after a flagship smartphone, a games console, a laptop, maybe a camera, smartwatch, or even a bit of retro tech, buying pre-owned can save you a serious amount of money compared to buying brand new.
And you don't have to compromise on quality either. Everything is fully tested before it goes on sale, so you know that it's working exactly as it should.
Indeed, and every item comes with a 5-year warranty, which is actually longer than many brand new gadgets offer.
Yeah, and here's the clever bit. If you're thinking about upgrading, your next gadget doesn't have to come entirely out of your own pocket.
Yeah, the smartest way to upgrade isn't always spending more. It's making the most out of what you've already got. CEX will buy your old phones, your tablets, laptops, games consoles, other gadgets for cash, or even give you more in-store credit, helping bring the cost of your next purchase right down.
Head to webuy.com or pop into your local CEX store to see what's available and how much your old tech could be worth. Right then, let's get into this week's tech news. Now, Jace, I wanted to talk about the price of tech. This is a story that we've been touching on over the last few podcasts, but over the last week, it feels like we've reached something of a tipping point, doesn't it? Because last week, Apple announced a price increase of up to 20% on some of its iPads and MacBooks. That's significant enough on its own, but it's also the latest in a growing list of technology companies putting their prices up rather than bringing them down. Over the past few months, we've seen Microsoft increase the price of Xbox Series X and S, Sony raised the cost of the PlayStation 5, Nintendo announced a price increase for Switch 2, and Valve launched its new Steam machine at a much higher price than originally planned, as we have discussed. For years, we've all become used to the idea that technology gets cheaper over time. A flagship phone launches at over £1,000, but give it a year and you'll start to see discounts. Consoles eventually fall in price. Last year's laptop becomes this year's bargain, that kind of thing. But that seems to be changing. Yeah, so what's behind it? Well, almost every manufacturer is pointing to the same thing. AI. Now, not the software itself, but the enormous investment going into AI infrastructure. The data centres powering services like ChatGPT and other generative AI tools require vast quantities of memory chips and high-speed storage. They're buying those components in huge volumes, and because they're prepared to pay a premium to secure supply, manufacturers are prioritising those orders. Now, the result is that the very same memory and storage components used in our phones, tablets, laptops and games consoles have risen dramatically in price. In fact, some parts of the industry have started calling the situation Ramageddon because the cost of RAM has more than doubled in a matter of months. Now, of course, AI isn't solely to blame. Inflation, supply chain pressures and wider geopolitical uncertainty, they're all playing their part as well. And the consequences are already reaching consumers. What was an occasional adjustment is beginning to look like an industry-wide trend now. So where does this leave consumer technology? Because if the cost of building gadgets continues to rise, manufacturers really only have a handful of options. They can keep increasing the prices, they can absorb the costs themselves, which shareholders won't enjoy at all, or greedy, or they can try to keep prices down by making compromises elsewhere. Now, that could mean using cheaper materials, removing features, or slowing the pace of hardware improvements. There is another possibility. Could rising costs actually force manufacturers to become more creative? I mean, this may be coming from the heart now. For years, we've become accustomed to annual smartphone launches where the improvements have often felt fairly iterative. A slightly brighter screen, you know, just a slightly faster processor, a marginally better camera. Perhaps those days are coming to an end now. If consumers are being asked to spend £1,500 on a smartphone or over £1,000 on a games console, simply telling them it's 10% faster than last year's model. It's probably not going to be enough anymore. Maybe this is exactly the pressure the industry needs. Maybe manufacturers will have to focus on meaningful innovation instead of incremental upgrades. Longer battery life, better repairability, longer software support. Whatever happens, it feels like we're entering a very different era for consumer technology, at least. For decades, we've taken it for granted that tech would become cheaper, faster and more powerful every year. Yeah. Now, for the first time in a long time, I think that assumption is being challenged. And the next few years could completely reshape the way technology is designed, marketed, and ultimately the way all of us decide when it's time to upgrade. Now, what do you think about that?
It's a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's why I said it might be a bit head-heart, really, with, you know, the innovation side of it.
Yeah, someone will go down that route. I mean, I think there is a bit of a kind of simple tech movement happening.
Yeah, definitely. There's a bit of a pushback, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And there's a and that will ultimately lead to startups innovating new products that give maybe a more simple, more earthy kind of human interface experience that isn't tied to the latest graphics processor. But it is problematic. I mean, some manufacturers are now restarting old manufacturing techniques so that they can make more affordable graphics cards, for example. but I just don't know what the answer is, because we're in a kind of, well, we're in an arms race that we never really asked for, aren't we? It's China versus the US and Europe sort of lagging behind. I'm, of course, talking about the kind of race towards AGI, artificial general intelligence. It feels like that's the goal. It's like a Manhattan Project that we have no power over whether it happens or not. And everything is being sucked into the black hole of AI. I don't know where the positive spin is at the moment.
No, I don't. And I think, you know, how much, like you just said, we can't do anything about it. I mean, it used to be that consumers did have some weight in sort of choosing what they bought. And I wonder now whether, because people are in their own kind of ecosystem of technology, that they're a little bit, you get used to it and you get a bit stuck and you just go for the same brand generally. I wonder, you know, whether people will question that or not. I'm not asking for an answer. I just think it's quite an interesting crossroads.
Well, interesting, Susie, to your point about the kind of innovation that we might see as a result of not all the latest, greatest hardware being available. I don't know, we made a bit of a stretch, but the team at Honor, you remember Honor, the phone people, they just sent to the Gadget Show podcast a brand new Magic V6 foldable. You should be able to see it on screen right now. It goes on sale in the UK on the 2nd of July.
Oh, look at that.
Okay. I'm going to give you the bad news up front and then it should get a little bit more interesting. Recommended retail price, £1,999.
No!
But at launch, it'll be available for £1,499. Ooh, through selected retailers like Amazon, Currys, Argos and Very. Okay. Which I think it's not terrible when you think that the top end smartphones in every category are, you know, often north of £1,000. £1,499.
Let's just have a moment for it. Look at it. That is very sexy.
You should probably tell you what it's all about, shouldn't I?
Yeah, go.
So the Magic V6, no, not at all. It's one of the thinnest foldable phones that we've ever seen. Just 8.8 millimetres thick, Susie, when folded, and just 4.1 millimetres when you open it up. And it weighs just 219 grams, which means it actually feels much closer to a conventional flagship phone, like a pro level iPhone, than the chunky foldables that we were served up only recently, actually, by the likes of Samsung, etc. Open it up. Before you open it up, it's got a rather snazzy single screen on the outside, which is really impressive. But let's open it up. You're greeted by a huge 7.95 inch OLED display, while the outer screen that I just referenced is a very usable 6.52 inches. So when it's folded, it behaves like a normal smartphone. You can watch a podcast on it if you want to. You can look at a bit of YouTube. But it's inside where I think the headlines, you know, the headline grabbing experience is. I mean, it's just beautiful. The fold, I don't know if we can flex it on screen now. The fold is virtually imperceivable. When it's off, you can see the fold, right?
Yeah.
When it's on, it's you can't see it. And it's the black screen and that allows you to see the fold, Susie. But when it's on, all right, it's invisible. Mm. It's so nice. You can just about feel it when you run your finger over it. Inside, Susie, there's Qualcomm's latest Snapdragon. It's the 8 Elite processor. 16 gig of RAM, 512 gig of storage. Not bad. Mm. A huge 6,100 milliamp hour silicon carbon battery plus a triple camera system. Made up of a 50 megapixel main camera, a 50 megapixel ultra wide, and get this, a 64 megapixel periscope telephoto with 3x optical zoom. I can hear John Bentley
will be loving that.
Yeah, just getting very enthusiastic. Now, the interesting thing is the timing. So it's pretty clear that one Susie Perry, who has predicted the rise of Apple's own entry into the foldable market, is happening very soon. Only a few weeks away, really, at the end of the summer. And most analysts expect Apple's first foldable phone to be the centre of, you know, their main event come sort of September time. You know, which is key because Honor have had several generations to refine this formula. And if Apple is asking the same sort of money, let's say that top price of £2,000, well, it's going to have to be good, isn't it? It's going to have to be good because this from Honor is absolutely exceptional. Otherwise, Apple could be pricing themselves out of a market they're only just entering, a little bit like, you know, the kind of, well, I have to admit it, the Vision Pro, which, you know, I'm a huge fan of. But just this week, I was reading about how little revenue it's producing. No one's buying the Vision Pro, basically.
No one's got any money.
Yeah, well, that's true. For the Honor, though, our first impressions are incredibly positive. And if this is the direction premium smartphones are heading, well, it's going to be one of the directions. I'm not going to say the direction because I'm still a bit on the fence. You've definitely sold me on this, Susie. The issue is one of practicality, right? Which is, you know, when I grab my smartphone, I whack it in my back pocket, shoot off down the hill on my skateboard in Newquay to go to the coffee shop. And sometimes I'm aware of it sort of wobbling around in my back pocket. I don't really even think about that. You know, could I hazard putting a double, a £2,000 or £1,500 folded, heavier thing in my back pocket? I've just had a quick look, and okay, so the iPhone 16 Pro weighs 199 grams, so that's, you know, that's the one I whack in my back pocket.
You're not gonna notice that.
And the Magic V6 from Honor is just 219 grams, so it's only 20 grams heavier for a considerably much bigger viewing experience.
Yes.
And all the other cool functionality that you get from not a double screen, actually three screens, because you've got the front screen and then you've got the one, two that make a double when you fold it out.
It's a no-brainer. I'm telling you, foldables, no-brainers.
Okay, look, I think Suze, you know what? Are you on some commission?
No, but it's I've just always loved the idea of it. Just send it to me so I can trial it for a week and then I'll try and give you an honest opinion without being biased.
I think that's a good idea. A bit of hands-on is what's required.
Yeah.
Okay, quick question. If I handed you £5,000 right now and dropped you into a CEX, what would you buy? Because one of our Patreon supporters is about to find out.
That's right. We're giving one lucky supporter £5,000 to spend at CEX. And if you're wondering what that actually looks like, here's some footage of our previous winner, Richard Wykes, spending his haul.
Thank you, Gadget Show.
£5,000 at CEX, it goes a very long way. You could pick almost anything from your tech dreams, like a gaming PC, a PlayStation 5 Pro, an Xbox Series X, a Nintendo Switch 2, a giant OLED TV, a premium soundbar, a 4K Blu-ray player,
a MacBook Pro, an iPhone, an iPad, an Apple Watch, AirPods Pro, a flagship Android phone, a powerful laptop,
a DSLR camera, a couple of lenses, a drone, an action camera, a smartwatch, noise-cancelling headphones, a VR headset, a tablet,
a Dreamcast, a GameCube, a Nintendo 64, a PlayStation 2, a stack of retro games, a racing wheel.
Whatever your tech obsession, £5,000 at CEX can completely transform your setup. And our friends at T3 are also throwing in a year's subscription to the magazine.
Plus, when you join us on Patreon, you'll get ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, bonus content, and access to a brilliant community of fellow gadget lovers.
And if you're on the Max tier, you'll also unlock the entire Gadget Show archive.
That's nearly 20 years of gadget reviews, legendary challenges, road trips, and plenty of moments we'd probably, you know, rather maybe forget, actually.
or we wouldn't be allowed to make today, that's for sure. So yeah, join absolutely. Patreon. You're automatically entered into the draw.
Just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow to find out more. You'll find all the details and full terms and conditions in the episode description. Good luck.
Now, over the last few weeks on the podcast, we found ourselves talking more and more about the impact that technology is having on our lives.
So we thought it was about time we spoke to someone who understands not just technology, but what it's doing to us. Dr. Charlotte Armitage is a psychologist and psychotherapist who specialises in media psychology, helping people understand the relationship between technology, social media, and our mental well-being. Charlotte, welcome to the Gadget Show podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I can see a book behind you, Generation Zombie. I'm interested. Is there such a thing as a tech zombie?
I think we're heading there. But mainly, so I think the thing is, this whole conversation is really quite nuanced. It's not as simple as tech bad, you know, no tech is good. You know, it's not actually, it's complicated. There's a whole world of technology, and some of that is incredibly useful and helpful for our lives. My biggest concern is when there's an integration of technology into the life of a child. So the younger that children get tech, smartphones mainly, and iPads, the poorer the outcomes on mental health. And it's when that technology infiltrates the parent-child relationship as well. Because children learn with the interaction with the world, and anything that has an impact on their ability to interact with the real world can have an impact on their development. And that's where I think if we don't get it right in the early years, we're going to end up seeing this kind of generation zombie as they get older.
I'm very grumpy about smart glasses. Jason, not so much. We've talked a lot about them on the podcast, and it feels like everybody's talking about them. Every time I see anything, people are talking about smart glasses. Do you think that we'll eventually become comfortable with smart glasses like we have done with smartphones?
I don't know. They're such an invasion, aren't they? We're already at a point where we can't live anymore as we want to live, because we have to filter everything, don't we? If you think about when we were young, I don't know what you were doing, but I'm just very glad that it wasn't being recorded. And we don't have that opportunity for younger people anymore to make mistakes, but we almost can't make mistakes either if someone gets a photo of us or a video of us doing, I don't know what we want to do in our free time, but that isn't congruent with how we present ourselves for work. That could have an impact on our careers. We're already at that point where we're having to filter anyway. Young people don't get to live. They can't make mistakes. These glasses are another layer of that. Everything's going to be captured, isn't it, through them? So we are eroding privacy. I think I hope we don't get used to them, but it's the drift. It's that sort of drift of perception where we just...
Charlotte, can I ask you a very specific question to what you do regarding glasses? Because a lot of the pushback I get when I get on my soapbox about glasses, and I feel like I get a lot of backing, but you never know which way things are going, because it depends who you're talking to, of course, and algorithms, etc. But people say to me, well, what's the difference between a smartphone being pointed at you and someone wearing glasses with a camera in? Psychologically, what is the difference between the two?
Well, it's surreptitious, isn't it? I do think the glasses are almost covert. You can be wearing them, people don't know you're wearing them. I had a friend who took their newborn to a shoot and you know, they do these little newborn shoots, took all the kids, and the husband noticed the man who was doing the shoot was wearing these glasses. So whilst the baby's being changed and, you know, into these different outfits and nappies being changed, these glasses being worn. So they did raise it and said, I'm not comfortable. You didn't tell us you were wearing these glasses. These are children that are here. And he just explained it. So, oh, well, I was making a cool video from the shoot with the glasses afterwards. But they didn't know that he was wearing it. So if we got to a point where it was glaringly obvious and everybody knew and it was consent, but when do you get to a point where you're wearing those and people go, ooh, they're not going to talk to you, I'm going to be careful what I say, you know, it's filtering, it's a natural barrier in between you and the world that's around you, people.
Yeah, that's actually a horrendous story that you've just told us there. I mean, I don't think anybody can push back on that. And I think, Charlotte, you know, we're living in a world where everything's a data grab now, and it's hard always to put the genie back in the bottle. But I mean, Jace, you and I are polar opposite on these. I would like cameras to be banned from them. And I know you're completely opposite to me with that.
I'm aligned, but I'm just in a different part of the spectrum. I'd like the government to stop surveilling me wherever I go.
Charlotte, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about the social media ban for under 16s in the UK. What are your thoughts on that? Do they work?
It's a line in the sand. It sets the precedence. It's the same as the smoking ban. You know, if you think about years ago when I was younger, you'd smoke in pubs, didn't you? Now you can't do that. So I'm glad for it, honestly. And, you know, the thing with social media is, you know, yes, there's a world of horror online. But even if you forget about that, even if you look at the lightest end of the spectrum, there's still huge amounts of problems with children spending. And it is 7, 8, 9 hours plus a day sat on a phone. It's what are they missing out on? So the social media is the mechanism that holds attention, and it holds the child to the phone because of the addicted algorithms. The damage is caused by what they're not doing in the real world when they're doing that.
But the question here probably is, how do you use it in moderation? And is it possible to use it in moderation?
They're addictive. They are designed to be addictive. There's, you know, these companies have spent a fortune in turning these algorithms to be highly addictive. You've just said it there. You struggle with it. I struggle with it. Most adults would say that they do, once they pick up that phone, they're lost in a whole world of everything that's going on there, and that they would probably struggle to be without the device for whatever reason that is now. I mean, you could argue that some addictions are habitual as well. You know, you ask someone who's dying of smoking, they're still stood outside of a hospital taking their last breath through a cigarette, aren't they? And they're about to, you know, die because of how much they've smoked over their lives. It's habit, so they can't get away from, obviously, you know, there's a physical addiction to smoking, but there also is to a device as well. The amount of dopamine that's been released into the brain, you know, I do think that this very steep rise in the number of people who think they've got ADHD is actually related to withdrawal from the device rather than actual. But not everybody, I think that withdrawal from a device presents in symptoms that mimic ADHD, but are not actually the diagnosis of ADHD.
I just feel that in general, for many people, and it's not their fault, it's the, you know, it's the social economic situation that people find themselves in. You know, life has become more toxic, both in terms of the consumption of pharmaceuticals, just the easy way that we can get
disposable.
You know, pop a pill, yeah, and the poor quality of a lot of food, begrudgingly, you do make a very convincing argument in terms of the sedentary nature of a lot of our interaction with technology. You know, ironically, though, the phone being almost for me the worst example, though, because it's the one that enables you to get out and about and take photographs and, you know, just interact with the world a little bit. But yeah,
Charlotte, why are we so lazy? What makes us lazy? Why are we so? We are lazy bastards. We are. Now, I look back So I was born in 1970. Just let me say, I'm 56 years old.
Good
I grew
grief.
Up in, had a fantastic, shut up. I had an absolutely fantastic childhood. It was out there. It's like all the Instagram posts show you, camping, making fires, out on the bikes, coming back when it went dark, etc. That was my childhood. It was absolutely bloody brilliant. And now it's completely changed. And I'm not saying all children are lazy. I'm not, because I'm an advocate of sport and I see lots of kids doing great sport and teamwork and it's wonderful. And I really think everybody should be pushing that side of life
yes.
to get out there and do that. But inherently, that it's not happening. It's like really pushing something heavy to get people out and do sport. Why inherently are we lazy? Is it because it's easier?
Path of least resistance. Absolutely. It's easier. You know, we're humans at the end of the day. And I think we're humans. We're going to do naturally, innately. We are going to do what's easiest to get, have our needs met.
Even though we know it's unhealthy, even though we know we're going to put weight on and we're going to, you know, get ultimately problems with diabetes and heart and Alzheimer's and things like that if we don't look after our bodies properly. We know that. We're not stupid, are we? We do know that. So why don't we push through and set ourselves targets and boundaries?
That takes effort. And, you know, naturally, we're going to do what's easier and what feels good. And that is the problem with introducing huge amounts of dopamine into the world of children, whether that's through sugar or devices, is that we are actually wiring them to just expect this gratification of dopamine for not doing very much. There was a study done years ago, it's an old study, where an intracranial electrode was put into the brain of a rat. So innately, animals will, you know, females have babies and their job is to nurture those babies until they can go look after themselves. This rat could press a lever and have dopamine released into its brain as often as it wanted to. And it just sat there pressing the lever to the point that its babies died. So it hijacked its biological systems to look after its own children. That's what happens. So if something feels good, we're going to want to keep on doing it. That's what we are like as humans. So, yeah, I think that's where it all comes from.
Can I ask you then, Charlotte, to predict what you're talking about here? So you're talking about young, let's say you have a baby now, and that it's how technology changes the way that child will develop, the brain and the body and the health, everything, every part of that child. So how will that affect the child then?
Muscle strength and development, coordination. So you have children starting school now that can't hold a pen properly. They can't hold knife and fork because they don't do that. They do that movement. So they're not, it's the tangible sort of picking up, playing with a ball or something like this, that, you know, that throwing, catching, those sorts of skills that we do in childhood, that if you're doing it via a game, you're just going on the phone or an iPad or something like that. So we've got musculoskeletal development, coordination, dexterity, eyesight, speech and language, stamina, so cardiovascular development as well, obesity levels, attentiveness. There is research that evidences the impact of viewing short form content on the development of our brains in terms of our ability to focus and pay attention, sustain conversation, to listen, that sort of thing. So really across the whole child. So if that's what we're being, if this is what the child's like in the early years, it does, that's when you're supposed to be at your fittest and most mobile, is in your, as you're growing up and developing. This is where my sort of theory of generation zombie comes in, is that we're going to get to a point where we're hunched, we can't move as much, we can't run, we're not really going out seeing people, we can't focus, we can't pay attention, we become more mindless, we can't think for ourselves. That's where that theory comes from. So what I'm an advocate for is let the human just evolve as a human until the brain's as matured as possible and the body as developed as possible. Then if you want to introduce technology at that point, do it there, but not this sort of fusion of technology from, you know, looking. I've seen babies in buggies, you know, 4, 5, 6 months on smartphones.
I think we've gone full circle with this.
Brilliant. Yeah, no, fascinating.
Really fascinating, Charlotte.
Thank you.
Charlotte.
Really
thank
interesting
you.
Stuff.
Okay, good. Hope that was helpful.
And that's all we've got time for on this week's Gadget Show podcast.
Yes, and thank you to our guest, Dr. Charlotte Armitage, for joining us today.
And of course, thank you so much to you for listening, watching and spending a part of your week with us.
But before we go, we'd also like to say a massive thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see their legendary names on screen right now.
Yeah, your support helps us make more podcasts, more videos, and keep The Gadget Show growing. We genuinely couldn't do it without you, so thank you.
Yes, and if you would also like to become part of the community, you'll get ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, bonus content, and the full Gadget Show archive.
And you'll automatically be entered into our £5,000 CEX Tech Shopping Spree giveaway.
Yes! And trust me, if I won that, I'd be at CEX for days. I'd take a sleeping bag. If you'd like to find out more, then just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow.
All right, right then. We'll be back next week with more gadgets, more tech, and plenty to get stuck into.
Until then, thanks for joining us.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.